Blog Talk Radio. Hey, and welcome to another edition of Continue Mission. You know, it's every Friday night. and it's from 10 p.m. to midnight, okay? 10 p.m. to midnight, every Friday night, Eastern Standard Time. And we have got a great show tonight. So we're going to talk about true capitalism and democracy and all those things, you know. But we've got Father Pacella, a graduate from Ivy League school. I'm going to let him go into that. You know, I mean, I'm talking about the real deal professor here, folks. That's what I'm talking about. So we're going to talk about capitalism and how that if you have true capitalism, and I'm not talking about crony, corrupt capitalism, but true capitalism that will take care of poverty, will help people to get jobs. Look, ultimately, it takes each of us working together and to get up and pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and go to work. But, you know, you got to have some place to go to work, too. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're also, you know, got a lot of things going on in the world. You know, there's a lot of drama in the world. And, you know, everybody has it, right? Everybody has it. We are challenged in life every day. There's always a challenge. You know, I have challenges. You have challenges. Sometimes those challenges are very tough ones. Oh, that pit you against people that you love, and it happens, okay? But ultimately, if you maintain your faith and you maintain your guidance in life, you know, the guidance that God gives you, okay? So I'm going to talk a little bit about faith here, all right? So if you will maintain that guidance in life, you'll be able to work through any rough spot, okay? Any rough spot. Sometimes, you know, we find ourselves in positions where, you know, people that we love the most, we hurt. And we don't mean to do that. But we do it from time to time. And, you know, we got to move through that. So, God be with all of you that are struggling right now or dealing with things, you know, because there's thousands of you out there that are listening to me. So I am certain but going through a crisis, you know, a crisis. I have some very good friends who have a son, you know, like I said, I think I talked about it last week, and I'm not going to go into any names or stuff, but their son was good. It was really bad. And I had another friend who had a son that had issues like that at school, and unfortunately he took his life, you know. It's been over a year ago. And so seeing when things like that happen now, if I know about it, I'm going to take action, you know. I mean, I'm going to do something. The least I can do is write a letter. The least I can do is boost somebody's morale. That's the least I could do, right? And I think that we should all try to do that. We should all try to demonstrate a level of kindness and compassion and do it. Just do it, for God's sakes. Just do it. Don't worry about what anybody thinks. Just do it. Kind word that you say to that one person at that one time in their life could be all the difference in the world. And we want to build people up. We don't want to break them down. You know, even when I was training soldiers in the Army, you know, I broke people down, but I also built them up. And people think that a sergeant or a drill sergeant or someone is just mean all the time. That's not true. Now, there are sadists that are out there that just like to be hateful, mean, and just brutalize people. And those people, you know, have a mental illness. They do. They have a mental illness. They're sick, and there's a problem with them. But those of us that have a conscience, those of us that have a desire, we see that we're training someone for a greater purpose. And sometimes life, you know, you run into these speed bumps in life and you don't see it coming, and you hit this big pothole in life and you think, how am I ever going to recover from this? And day by day you do. Day by day you do. You just have to stay in the game. So if you're out there feeling hopeless and you think nobody cares, well, I care. I really do. And I want you to be happy, all of you. Don't let a bad thing in your life define the person that you are. Let it make you strong. You will be honed stronger than steel through some of these challenges in life. And not that you let it go, not that you forget, but that you use it as a way to build yourself up. And so all of you that are out there, you have a beautiful life. And it's worth living. It really is. It really is. Even whenever it's really bad, it's really worth living. Trust me. I've been at the bottom of a vehicle with blood coming out of me thinking, I'm going to die. I'm okay with it, but I'm going to die. And then I thought to myself, no, I'm not going to die. I'm going to live. And that was the greatest feeling in the world, is when you take that first breath after you think that you're taking your last one. And then you go on with life. So, you know, life's a wonderful, beautiful thing. Don't let someone rob you of your joy. Someone or some event that's happened in your life. And I want you just to stop what you're doing right now. And I'm giving you all a virtual hug right now, okay? And it might sound as corny and as crazy as it can sound, but everybody that is just sad right now, it's just, I'm giving you my best virtual hug right now. And if you could see me, I've got my arm stretched out. And it's sincere, okay? Everybody understand that you are loved. There's somebody out there that loves you and cares about you. Even when you think this radio host loves humanity and loves everybody in it, there are some people I don't want to hang out with, you know, because they say and do bad things, but I love humanity enough that I make mention of this, you know, and we want life to go on, and we want people to have a future. So don't think for one minute that now's the time to throw in the towel. Now's the time to tighten up your shot group, move forward with life, and live it, man. Live it, live it, live it. Don't waste any time. Don't waste any damn time worrying about something in the past that has caused you heartache. I'm not going to worry about things that happened 15, 20 years ago. I can't do anything about it. You know, yes, it's painful. There are some painful memories, you know, in my life. There are some in your life as well. You know, here recently, you know, I got a service dog. Yep, that's right. I got a service dog. People look at me and they say, well, why would you need a service dog? Well, I have a traumatic brain injury. And in the last, couple months, I have experienced, you know, some severe vertigo. My hearing is going in my right ear, but I'm okay with that. Okay. This dog, his name is Bravo. He now goes out and metal detects with me. And he stays right beside of me. And for some reason, he can sense, you know, when I'm starting to get a little wobbly, you know. he will lean up against the side that I am starting to sway towards. So I'm not, you know, I'm not falling down. I mean, this dog's 5 months old, 50-pound German Shepherd, you know what I mean? Big dog, but still a pup. But that smart. Has his bed, you know, and lays, stays right next to where I'm at. And every now and then, in the middle of the night, as my arm's hanging off the edge of the bed, he'll walk over and he will just lick my hand to make sure that I'm okay. That's a pretty good thing. So, anyways, Bravo, the digging dog. That's what we're calling him. He's going to get his own YouTube channel. And I believe that the people will love seeing him probably more than they love seeing me. And you know, that's okay because he's my buddy. And anyways, we got a great show tonight. And I wanted to break into this mellow mode before we get into this, you know, into this learning mode. I want us to get our minds ready to learn something really good. I'm telling you, Father Michael is going to give us an overview on something that you would normally have to pay a lot of money to sit in a classroom and get this level of education. So don't waste it, okay? Pay attention. You know, you might want to record it. You might want to take some notes because I think it's going to be a great show. So anyways, Father Pacella, Rich Kilblaine, God bless you. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Are we ready for tonight?
Absolutely.
All right, all right. You know, I've been looking forward to this. Ever since you sent the emails, you know, Rich sent a message today, you know, and it's always, you know, hey, so what's the topic? You know, we talk about the topic. And there are some days, I've just got to say this to all of you listeners out there, that I'm like, I've got to figure out what we're going to talk about, and we pray on it. So I know, Father, you pray on everything, you know. It's like, and I pray on it, you know, what's the message? And then, you know, as I'm sitting there praying on it, then here comes your text message. You know, it's like, that's a great idea. I think we should talk about that. I've never even heard of that, what you were saying today. So I don't want to steal your thunder. But what's going on? What's shaking? How's everybody doing? We ready? Rich, you ready?
We're ready.
All right. We're
ready.
All right.
Ready here.
Ready, 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 Freddy. Okay, Father Michael, you've got the mic. What are we going to talk about
okay.
tonight?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, at the end of the program, we mentioned something about unrestrained capitalism. And I began to speak to you about Adam Smith's work, which is from 1776, The Wealth of Nations. And one thing that's not known very clearly about that is that he set moral parameters around capitalism. Yes, those who engage in unrestrained capitalism become greedy. They never have enough. But those who understand that if they're productive, they can provide jobs for others, they can give to the poor. Now, there's three words that are used. I was looking at something from an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, Ryan Patrick Hanley, and he mentions three different virtues are in the marketplace. The first one is prudence, and prudence is like proceed with caution. You know, don't just go head hog into something. Just make sure that you're taking your time and you're being prudent. The other one is magnanimity. And the last one is beneficence. And these have to do with generosity. You know, God blesses us to bless others. You know, we become like a channel. And so some people have taken hold of this capitalist system, and they think it's all for their self-indulgence. And that's not at all what the plan is about. It is about reaching your potential. It is about working hard, using your God-given gifts. But it's not just for self-indulgence so that I get a bigger home, a bigger car. No, there's a mission. There's many, many things that we can do with these things. So I wanted to establish that first and then maybe give a little bit of a background as to what his life was all about, this kind of thing, because, again, we've looked at it as a corrupt system. We've looked at it as something that has no real benefit for the community. And we have seen many people that have come into our country. My both grandfathers came from Italy for opportunity. And I thank God for this system that enables you to work hard, to become educated, to do whatever you have to do as far as being a part of an apprenticeship or whatever, and to succeed. My grandfather on my father's side was able to purchase a home. Now, he was a farmer along with my grandmother in Italy. He was a truck driver. I think it was a garbage truck in Lower Manhattan. But then they moved into New Jersey, and he worked really hard, and he saved. And it had nothing to do with the fact that he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth or that he had an inheritance. He was able to come to a land of opportunity. And so I just really wanted to encourage us that there are such things as good uses of capital. You know, even Henry Ford, he provided many things for his workers, good homes. He provided affordable cars for people. And so, you know, we want to look at the wealthy all the time as evil and not as productive. Now, yes, capitalism cannot be unrestrained. You don't need a 24-karat gold toilet seat. Okay, there are people that are just so indulged. They don't understand that you're entrusted. You can't take it with you. One of my parishioners died yesterday. I was in the hospital with her and her family for about 6 hours. And the whole purpose, and I remember Denzel Washington saying, you never saw a U-Haul truck behind a hearse. And so people misunderstand why we are able to gain wealth as a blessing from God, as a product of hard work, but that there are moral parameters that you have to understand. It's not for greed. See, Scripture says the love of money is the root of all evil. You know, some people, maybe like Karl Marx, they want to say money itself, the system itself. No, that's not so. And like I pointed out about Adam Smith, is that he had this whole area. Now, you have to understand, this is 1776. Declaration of Independence was written. And we adopted this system, but also understanding, just like the power that we have in the military, but because we understand that the greatest among you shall be the servant of all, that we're servant leaders, you don't abuse your authority, which is delegated. No one has power but God. He had a Scottish background, and, you know, we have adapted this type of economics. And yes, it's been abused. Anything you look at has been abused, but you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so I just think that we have to understand there's a reason why we're blessed, a reason why we have increase, and it's not just for our own consumption. Now, I'm not trying to lay guilt on people that have prospered because they've worked hard or their business has succeeded. Doesn't mean that you have to give it all away, although Jesus said it was very hard for a person who trusts in their wealth to then transfer that and trust in him, like the rich young ruler who had not only knelt before Jesus, but had kept the commandments all of his life. So I want us to have a fresh understanding about investment, about what this whole purpose is of being an entrepreneur, how I can flourish and reach my potential and be a blessing to others. I know of a business that was in Philadelphia, run by Christians, started in the basement or garage of their home, and it was just repairing car parts. By the time I was involved, I didn't work there, but I knew family members that did. It was a large company in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, provided jobs for so many people. What a wonderful environment it was. My father-in-law was a chaplain there, the first industrial chaplain in that place. And they would pray together, help one another. But there's nothing wrong. We don't have to be envious when someone has more than we have. We don't have to covet it. You know, really, when you envy, it's like you have pain when somebody you know is doing better than you. Sometimes we need to ask them, how did you do it? You know, maybe I can learn something. Maybe I can do more for the poor. I can do more if I'm more productive. So I want to set the stage tonight by saying unrestrained capitalism is greed, okay? And like I said, we don't need a 24-karat gold toilet seat. But having moral parameters, caution, generosity, beneficence, these are things that help us understand the purpose. And again, getting back to what Jesus said, the love of money, where you trust in money. But we know that the monetary system will fail. My mother told me stories about the Great Depression. People jumped out of windows because their trust was in their investments. And so we have to use money, not let use us. But there's another tidbit that I think would be helpful. Sometimes we're dictated to by money rather than obeying God and what we should do, because truly God is our source and God provides. If you have ever read the Bible, you see the feeding of the 4,000, the feeding of the 5,000. Even when Peter had to pay the tax, he went angle fishing and found a coin in the belly of the fish. So God's a great provider. But one thing that we have to use as a litmus test is, do I have it or does it have me? Because the scripture says, don't let your character be tainted by covetousness. Careful that we can handle, not everybody can hear handle wealth. You know that most people that have won the lottery have lost it because they didn't know how to handle it. And so we want to talk about the fact that there's a purpose for wealth and riches. Now, we know that Jesus became poor that we might become rich. That's not monetarily. That's spiritually. But nonetheless, we have to understand how when he commented about the widow who put in barely a penny and the other people were putting in the treasury all this big money out of their abundance, that there's such a thing as sacrifice. And you probably have heard as well as I have, where many rich people have lost their wealth and regained it, lost it and regained it. They learned how to handle it and didn't allow it to handle them. So, you know, we can't say that the capitalist system is wrong. It can be abused just like anything else can be abused, but you don't throw the baby out with bathwater.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, as we think about capitalism, you know, capitalism, democracy, these words, progressive. You know, when I was growing up, I used to hear the word progressive, and that meant progress. You know, it meant you were progressing forward. But now that's a different meaning. You know, capitalism, you know, was, you know, and there was even a an old cartoon that was out that talked about isms, you know, capitalism, socialism, communism, fascism, and it just kind of went in and it pointed out the negative sides to all of them. Now, obviously, I'm not a defender of socialism, communism, or fascism. I think that those are very bad, well-proven failures in how to manage an economy or a country. Many, you know, I mean, we can just go through. There's just a long list of them. But a true capitalist society, what does that look like, Father Michael? What does a true capitalist society look like?
A healthy one, I'll say that right from the start, can get health care. You can progress in life. You know, when people are flipping burgers for $15 an hour now, you don't say when others were making $6, $7 an hour, when I was a kid, maybe $1.50 an hour, you know, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. And you don't have to. That's the beauty. But it's sweat equity. I didn't have a lot of money to start with, but there's sweat equity that you have. And if you have goals and you're determined and you're in an environment where you can grow, you can become educated. Now, I've shared on the show, you mentioned my education. I took 17 years to finish my bachelor's degree. Then I went 8.5 years straight, my 3-year professional degree from Yale Divinity School. And then I took a postgraduate course in ethics at Harvard. And then, of course, I did a 2-year program to learn the Cambridge style. And then I started my PhD in Cambridge, England, and finished on this side of the Atlantic. But it's like it's in front of us. There's opportunity. But, you know, I was told that Italians didn't go to Harvard. You know, we were told that you can't. I was raised in the projects. I was so poor and so hungry. I remember fainting when I was a child while I was serving mass. And I remember we used to get weighed. And I was the same weight 2 years in a row. And this is the time you're supposed to be growing and you know, getting nourished, so on and so forth. My grandfather had a bad reputation. And my father didn't have a great one either. So I didn't inherit any money. As a matter of fact, I had to pay, I had gotten out of the military, to bury my father. And so I think sometimes we don't recognize that this system allows me to do whatever I want. And there are handicaps. I'm reading an interesting book my Archbishop recommended called The Unlikely Union, The Love-Hate Relationship Between the Irish and the Italians. And I'm appalled at some of what I'm learning. But you know something? They learned to get along with each other. They went to war together. They married each other. And they became something. You know, as an Italian, Justice Scalia makes us proud. There are other wonderful people that have done things in America. And I am convinced if my grandparents had not come here, I could have never achieved what I have. And I've been to Italy 3 times. It's a nice place to visit, but I want to live there. There's a 40% unemployment. This was before the pandemic, just for the young people. And the opportunities here because of our system, yeah, there's corruption, but some of the other systems are more corrupt. And as we learned from Omar, you know, the people don't get anything, don't have any opportunities to do anything. I want to read just a little bit real quick here before Rich comes in. This is one other thing that I looked up today. I looked in Google Scholar. I always like to read little abstracts of books that are written. And this is a book, and it's just a short abstract I like to read. It says, an inquiry into the nature and causes of the wealth of nations, generally referred to by its shortened title, The Wealth of Nations, is the magnum opus of the Scottish economist and moral philosopher, Adam Smith. We can't forget moral philosopher. First published in 1776, the book offers one of the world's first collected descriptions of what builds nations' wealth and is today a fundamental work in classical economics. By reflecting upon the economics at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, the book touches upon such broad topics as the division of labor, productivity, and free markets. 1776, it must be a good idea. It's outlasted
right.
many of these other ideas that have failed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what's the key to it? I mean, you know, you hear this, and I've heard this term, the difference between unrestrained crony capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're talking about is the level of is a true capitalism, you know, where people were,
right.
You know, that their job is what? What does it mean?
I think we all have gifts and talents, and I think you have
mm-hmm.
to stay within your sphere of competence. God has given
mm-hmm.
us endowments, talents, and people have dreams. I teach on a university campus, and I saw that they were having a guest on the campus giving him a tour. And I heard this one young lady say, I want to live my dream. And in America, under this system, look, I know there's injustices. I mean, the book
mm-hmm.
I just quoted. But you can mm-hmm. overcome obstacles. You know, Rich
mm-hmm.
was telling me how he overcame certain obstacles in life by what he learned at West Point and some of the hardships that he had to encounter when he was going through that system. And I think that we want to get at not trying to define ourselves by what we have, but by who we are, not how much gold you wear or how many diamonds. That prove anything. Okay, you have drug dealers that have that stuff. So we want to be, not just have. You know, we don't have that sense, but you want to say that I can dream, I can make goals, I can accomplish this. Now, for us, speaking about the three of us, we had to go into the military. And my father, also being 100% disabled vet, I was able to use some of his benefits. We were able to buy homes without a down payment because we were veterans, but we paid a price. Being deployed, away from our families,
mm-hmm.
being in a war zone, so on and so forth. And so I think when you have a system, the only thing that holds you back is your laziness and not understanding sweat equity. You know, I know you started a business.
Right.
I know people have started restaurants, and so many of them mm-hmm. fail. But, you know, we look at Abraham Lincoln and how many times he failed. And if we don't learn from our failures and don't understand that, you can't blame everybody. You can't blame the system. Now, it is corrupt because we are corrupt because of original sin. Doesn't mean that no good can come out of it. And there are some people that have done wonderful things. And I've read recently about a priest that won money in Atlantic City. You say, what was he doing in Atlantic City? He won $1 million. And they said, what are you going to do with it? He said, I'm going to give it to my church, give it to charity. I have everything. I'm fulfilled in life. See, this is the thing. It doesn't make you important what you have, but what you are. But when you know that if you have a dream and you're willing to pay the price, I enjoy listening to Steve Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Harvey, you know, makes a commitment to the Lord, and he'll be the first to admit he doesn't have the cleanest mouth. But he talks about some very important things that you do. And I don't know if you heard Morgan Freeman recently. You know, he's talking to Don Lemon, and he was saying that he's had wonderful opportunities as an African-American. Do I believe that some African-Americans and others have been stepped over? Absolutely. And, you know, we need to have reparation. But you can't look a gift horse in the mouth, okay? You know what I'm saying? You really have to recognize that there are opportunities, and if you're willing to work, see, this is where with the sweat equity, most people are not to work. They want it. I'll tell you a quick story. My chaplain, who had 10 children, he was on the Yorktown when it was hit. He was in the drink for a long time. As a matter of fact, he wrote a book, God Was at Midway. His wife was home praying. But he got out from being in the band. He went to college, and then he went to seminary, and he went in to be a chaplain. Now, there was another person that started the same process as he did at the same time, but he gave up. You know, my friend pastored a small church. His wife helped the kids to be quiet so he could study. And so when he finally went in, and by the way, he made 06. I was there when he put it on. His friend said to him, "Oh, you're lucky." I said, "I'm not lucky. Sweat equity. I paid the price. Like I said, I finished my schooling. And when I was in the best shape of my life, I couldn't play on the softball team in my church because I went to school 8 years continually, summers and everything, and had to get under that line because of my age as well, getting back into the military. And so I think when you have a system that enables you to have opportunity, you have to be willing to work. And I think most people are dreamers, but they don't know how to have short-term and long-term goals. They just like to dream. But then they envy because they see somebody else, they have it, or they got it easier, or they got this, or they got that. You know, we just have to be about our own business. And then we can be generous, and we can be cautious, and we don't have to be flamboyant and extravagant. But you can have nice things. The Bible says God gives us all good things to enjoy. You don't have to be ashamed. I've had nice cars, but my thing is, does it have me or do I have it? I think that's where the Lord wants us, not to trust in those things. But if you work hard, you deserve it. I recently have a friend who bought a really nice car, and he's worked hard all his life in some very difficult jobs, and he was kind of feeling bad about it. And I said, "I'm so happy," and we usually go out to lunch together, and he drives, and he earned it. Nothing to be ashamed of because somebody else doesn't have a car. My first car was $150, a 1962 Chevy Impala. I bought it because I worked. My parents said they would pay for the insurance until they understood the insurance was for a 17-year-old. So I had to sell it. But I had a car. You know, because I worked. My friends used to come down. I used to deliver groceries on a little golf cart in a big ShopRite. And my friends used to come down to grub money off me. But I remember when I was 15, and I'll be 68 in January, I made $53 during the Christmas season in one day just through tips, bringing people's grocery to their car. And, of course, my family was poor, and so my mother expected me to give most of it. I could get a drink or whatever. And when I got married, I had a big Italian wedding. We got a lot of money. And the Lord laid it on my heart and my wife's heart. You pay your widows, your mother's, who was a widow, all of her bills. Okay? And so I had that money. I was able to live a year in my first year of pastoring because we had such a big wedding and such a blessing from even family inheritance. So we didn't just say, "Oh, let's go on a big vacation." Even that was paid for. God provided. And so I think people have to have a proper understanding because it represents power sometimes. And people, when they have it, they have power and they can treat other people like they're better than them. You know, there are people, when I, you know, I'm an adjunct professor, and I know that there are probably custodial workers that make more than I do. Who cares? You know, they're human beings. They work hard, and that's what they enjoy doing, and they do it well. That, the place I teach and Rich teaches, it's immaculate. I mean, you could eat off the floor. And so they're worth what they're producing. But I think sometimes, you know, we get into this class warfare. See, more than ethnicity, the thing that Marx and some of those other people sold was class warfare. And we're always trying to compete with the Joneses. We're always trying to compete. You know, you're in that class, I'm in this class. Look, we're all made in the image of God. We're all children of God. It's been marred, but when we have things, and I've always been concerned, if I'm dressed nicely, I want to make sure that I'm not just an empty shell. I'm not just an image with no substance, kind of like when you go to a wedding, you see these beautiful dispensers for soap, and then you go to press and get some soap, and there's nothing there. Well, some people have the image, even like those with stolen valor, but they have no real substance. And I think know how to live plainly. I know a person who's quite wealthy. You would never know it. They're not ostentatious. They're generous. They're kind. They're content with what they have. And they have nice things and they go away. But you would never know because they don't wear it on their bodies. They know how to handle it. And I think that's the beautiful thing. And then inheritance. You can have a lot to leave for those, for their education, for things of that nature. You know, Solomon was very concerned. This was a man who did a lot of building, extremely wealthy, extremely wise, except in the area of women. And he was concerned. He said in Ecclesiastes, he said, I worked hard for all this stuff, and how do I know I'm not going to leave it to a fool? So a lot of people, you know, they build these great systems, they build these great companies, but then the next generation that hasn't had to work the same way, you know, even our former president, he really was hard on his children coming up. Now, his father lent him $1 million and so on and so forth, and, you know, he didn't steal it. You know, I'm talking about his father, but I think that we have to realize that we work hard, all that you're doing, you know, with the military order, the Purple Heart and everything, we want to know that we have a legacy, that we can leave it to someone that'll perpetuate the values that we have. And that's the same with finances. You know, some people manipulate their finances. I know Rockefeller, you know, he gave to this church or that church or whatever because they want to perpetuate what they believe in, this charity, that charity. And my son-in-law used to work for a big company, and they used to donate. Matter of fact, they built a big cafeteria for St. Jude's Hospital. Now, St. Jude's Hospital is a wonderful place. Children with cancer that are not charged. But we have a responsibility if we have wealth. That's why both my Yale and Harvard always send me magazines, always trying to get money, because they figure, you know, gave you a good education, which I paid for, but they want the money back. They know if you're successful, you'll be nice to them. And so country, not everyone's the same. You know, we don't have the type of job where we work three shifts. Everybody does the same job. Everybody makes the same amount. Listen, we are created equal morally and spiritually, but to say that certain people don't have more brain power or different gifts, you know, Einstein, different geniuses, different things like that. But the Bible says to whom much is given, much is required. And so you have to, you're a steward over what God has given you. And that's with finances, ideas. You know, people have great ideas. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I thought about how would it be on the phone if you could see the person. I thought about that years and years ago. I thought about these cars that you could just, you know, because parallel parking in the city is not fun. I thought, well, you could just kind of turn the wheels and just kind of go into it. People have ideas. They get patents. You can do that in the United States of America. And we're the most generous, philanthropic. Don't ever say that Americans are greedy. I mean, even with this Marine recently, people will always give to something they believe in. And because we're blessed, we're very generous. And I know that for sure, that people are grateful. You know, you think of the lepers. There were 10 of them that Jesus healed, but only one went back to thank him. And I think we have to learn this gratitude and also contentment. You see, Paul said that godliness is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. But contentment is not complacency. Some people, oh, well, I'm just going to do this and that's it. No, you got to, the Bible says that we work by the sweat of the brow until we return to the dust. There's no such thing as retirement. Okay, not scripturally, okay, nor is there dating, okay? You court, you know the person God has for you. And so, you know, you may do different things, but you're leaving a legacy, but you have a purpose. And in this environment, you can do anything you have the potential to do. You know, when I hear people say, oh, you can do anything you want to do, professional basketball player. Or I'm not going to be an astronaut. You know what I'm saying? There's certain proclivities and certain giftings that I have that I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And even certain prowess physically that we've been endowed with, even genetically. And so I just think that in this environment, people need to stop complaining. You know, you heard the story of the man who complained about not having any shoes until he saw the man with no feet. But to be grateful, because in our country, and all three of us have traveled extensively, to 75% of the world, we are middle class, if not upper class. And so, you know, we have these first world problems sometimes. You know, a student complaining about not having hot water. You know, I said, that's a first world problem, okay? Unfortunately, it's off for a little while. But we have to understand that it's not for self-indulgence, but nor is it to feel guilty if you got a raise. But let me give an example. If you got, let's say, a $25,000 raise, because I talk to businessmen, oh, I'm worth more, I'm worth more. You know, none of us are worth anything. The only thing that's worth anything is the blood of Jesus that saved us. But let's say for some reason you got a new account. Year you make $25,000 more than you made this year. So you have to ask the Lord as a steward. It's his money. Okay, Lord, I want to put another room on my house. The Lord may say, that is great. You can put another room on your house, a small one. But there's a guy that needs to go to seminary and needs support. So as part of that increase, I would like you to invest in this person who's going to preach the gospel around the world. And see, when we understand stewardship, that the silver and the gold is mine, says the Lord. When we understand that, then we don't have this sense of ownership. And then we can see God's economy work and bless where we didn't think we had enough. And God can multiply that. But providing, you know, we're honoring him with our tithe, we're giving offerings, we're giving to the poor alms. You know, we have to understand it's not all for us. But God will bless and prosper us, and we're blessed to be in this country. Like I said, I went to Italy 3 times, enjoyed it. It's wonderful. I'm so grateful my grandparents left. Because I wouldn't want to live there. I don't know. It was so laid back. Beautiful. A lot of places, very beautiful. So laid back, I just couldn't take it, you know, because I've been born. My wife tried to explain to me, you're an American. but I was brought up very ethnic. But I realized that it's a blessing to be here. Yes, there is crime, there's injustice, unfairness, but I don't know of any other system that's better. And so that's kind of where I'm coming in that regard.
So, Rich, what do you think about that?
Well, I've been, this is very entertaining, and I've been trying to figure out how to play the devil's advocate, and I think I got the angle. Okay. So, Father Michael, Karl Marx was a student of Adam Smith. So how did he get it wrong? How did he come up with the communist theory?
One word, envy. Envy.
And explain that.
You see, when you look at other people prosper and you think that it should be you, yeah, there's injustice. And he set the whole stage for, you know, the oppressed and the oppressor, and you got to break through the superstructure and all this kind of stuff. But I'm telling you, class warfare is envy. That's what it is. And, you know, we have a lot of racial injustices in our country, but I'm telling you, we are always pit against each other when it comes to class because it's envy. It's sin. Yes, there's injustice, but you don't, like the French Revolution, you don't kill off other people and use the same means as they do to change the system. See, Dr. King knew that better than Malcolm X, and I had a high regard for Malcolm X. I lived right outside of New York City during those times. But no, Marx got it wrong because he had envy, and when you're motivated by envy and benevolence, instead of understanding that you could use your wealth for good and still enjoy it because you worked for it. No, I really think that we really have that going on today. You know, we had to implement uniforms in our Christian school because some kids were coming with the best clothes and other ones who didn't have those nice clothes. So we said, you know, in order to keep your mind in school, your head in the game, let's just wear uniforms. We're here to work, okay? Now, that person whose father's a lawyer and mother's a doctor, thank God, bless them. They're working. Nobody gave it to them, okay? But we have to say, I could do that too. If I have the certain gifts and proclivity and the work ethic to work hard and become a doctor, I can do that too. But what happens is we just want to envy people, want to envy, oh, you know, you stole it, and, you know, your company was this, your company. I remember making fun of this guy. He owned a bakery, his family. And, you know, when you're young, you're stupid. And I started to say with my friend, we found a dog hair and a cupcake or something. He got so enraged because their family worked so hard in this bakery, and it was a good bakery. And you know, it's not easy to be in business, but it's so easy for someone to walk by and say, I should have that, not them. Well, you could have that if you're willing to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where he went wrong.
Well, now, the reason I brought that up is because we have a progressive movement now that has basically embraced Karl Marx's philosophy. And so, but their justification is that this capitalism is greedy and that there's no trickle down. You know, we have almost an entire class of people who are impoverished and not benefiting from this capitalism. And so going on right now, we have two main bills. An infrastructure bill and the $3.5 trillion budget they're trying to pass through. Now, the reason they're separated is because the conservatives and the moderates said, we're not going to put our country in that much debt. Let's pass an infrastructure bill, and then we'll discuss the other. Well, the progressives are saying, no, we're not going to pass the infrastructure bill, which everybody agrees we need, because then you'll just forget this one. We're going to hold the hostage. But if you look at, well, we don't have to really go into all the programs within that that other bill. It is the motivation behind it. And the whole idea of the progressives is that we have to tax the wealthy, those who have succeeded, in order to lift up and take care of the impoverished. Well, not just the impoverished. No, I mean the working class. We're going to take care of the working class. I think the majority of households are single parents, okay? So we need to invest, and there's a lot of truth to it. We need good health or daycare so that moms can work. You know, we're falling behind in our school. Now, they're ignoring the fact that falling behind because we're not, you know, we're failing at the daycare, you know, the preschool. Okay. So explain that. All right.
I think you're absolutely right, Rick, when we talk real clear about the poor. And I'm thinking about the book of James when they weren't given their wages. I'm also thinking about the Appalachian Trail. Now, a lot of people have so much in the world, and they're unwilling to share their knowledge. I read a story of a woman who in Africa was trying to raise a business and sell fruit, but all the insects were eating her fruit. And this wasn't a religious organization. It was in one of my Harvard magazines. And somebody sent her whatever she needed to take care of that problem. And the next year she had a bumper crop, and she was able not only to provide for her own family, but to also help some of her neighbors. And so I think we need to share the wealth in that way. But you know the old story, don't keep giving the fish, teach them how to fish. And in this way, he taught her how to farm. Okay, these are things that we could do so people have dignity. We call it subsidiarity. You power down on a local level. Then they have some sense of dignity. I did this. This is my bumper crop because you shared some knowledge that you had that I didn't have. And so I think there's a lot we have to do, and a lot of the churches have gone, built things at the Appalachian Trail. My wife's school provided 10,000 meals, okay? But you don't want them to stay there. I lived in the projects. I saw generation upon a generation. You want to break the cycle, okay? My grandfather, my father said, did own a house. I owned a home because of my VA benefits at 26. And so, you know, if you have to go into the military to take that stepping stone, well, that's not the only reason. I was patriotic, but that's not the only reason. But I think that we need to look at the fact that we can empower other people. We can teach them, train them, but then leave them to themselves so they have a sense that I built this. You know, I read a book called How Will You Measure Your Life? This man is a professor at Harvard Business School. He came from a very big family. He said when he was like in third grade or whatever, his pants ripped. His mother handed him a needle and thread. She said, sew it. You know, but when he did it, he said he walked away with the fact, I did that. Now, it probably didn't look as good as it would if the mother had done it, but she had so many children that she, you know, and I just think sometimes we enable people in the wrong way rather than empower people. And I know what it is to be poor. Believe me, we used to take donuts that were stale that the donut factory had thrown away to eat. I know what it is to lick salt off my hand. And we had soup with putting ketchup in boiling hot water. That was the soup. My mother would put 6 cans of tomato soup for all of us children. Okay, I understand what it is, but I don't think you have to stay there. But again, going back to the sweat equity, you have to be willing to work. Now, there is injustice. Now, you try to do something, somebody tries to, you know, block you. But there are a lot of people that persevered, and they made it anyway. Look at these veterans that are coming home with all kinds of handicaps, and they're still have fortitude and still want to live and be productive. I was watching a commercial tonight, and he builds wheelchairs. He lost two legs in Afghanistan. And, yeah, people came and helped to give him the home that he could live in. Still wants to do something. Helen Keller, if you want to read a good book, her autobiography. I used to teach English as a second language. And I had people with MBAs, one doctoral student. They couldn't get jobs because of the language barrier. She was an advocate. She said, just because we're blind doesn't mean we shouldn't have jobs. She was an advocate. And I just think there's a sense of work is dignity. But, you know, it's an important thing. And you can help someone. You know, in the Jewish community, I understand they'll stand with a young man until they're about 30, after they've gone to college and they've shown themselves responsible, maybe give them advice. I mean, I've taught in the business school over here, and you see retired businessmen mentoring upcomers. And these are the type of things we can do, but you can't do it for them. My wife gets upset when she asks me a question, and I don't know that much more about the computer than she does. She said, don't do it for me. Show me how to do it. And I think, you know, we just think just throwing things at people, no, a trade school or whatever, an apprenticeship, let me show you, you know, you can do this. You know, here's a hammer that you can build, probably make a lot more money than your comrades that are college, you know, your fellow friends that are going to college and will have big college bills. And here you'll have, you know, a real good trade. And so I really think that our system allows – how many stories have you heard? I started – mostly they're immigrants. I started as the sweeper, and now I own the company. How does that happen? That doesn't happen in too many other countries. It's hard work, sweat equity. So I don't have any equity, but I got sweat equity. You know, whatever it is, doing the best job as a painter – or whatever it is. I'm not trying to make it sound so simple, but in this country, irrespective of what's going on, so many people have succeeded because they thought they could. Other people are told, oh, you can't, you know, you're down, this person's keeping you down. You know, when I'm reading about these Irish and the Italians, look, Ken, they said the Italians were hard workers, and you do whatever you got to do. I used to drive up to Northern Virginia when we were paying $4 a gallon for gas during the summer to teach every day, get up 4 o'clock in the morning. They gave me an opportunity. My wife said, what are you doing? You know, and then I had other responsibilities. I read 7 books during that semester, you know, audio books. But you do what you got to do.
Well, yeah. The issue I'll bring up is from the biblical teachings, charity should come from the heart, all right? But there is a requirement that we have to take care of the widows and orphans. Basically, we have to take care of those who cannot take care of themselves, all right? Which is a wider spectrum, because that includes mentally handicapped, okay, the physically handicapped. All right, $1 trillion bill. We're looking at entitlements and additional entitlements, okay, where, for example, daycare is, while, you know, working women may not actually, I mean, when I say need it, I'm going, they don't need this to survive. But yet they need this. You're talking about work. They need this to be able to work, to be productive. So should the government pay for that program? does everybody, it should healthcare be a right? Okay. So education. So we discussed this. Should education? Good.
Grandpa, you know, I mean, so even the church, you know, when the government becomes God, because it provides all your needs, you're in trouble. And I think we need to step up in that regard. You're absolutely right about the weak. You're absolutely right about the widow and the orphan. We're lending to the Lord when we give to the poor. And we need to empty our closets. I told you the story. My wife called me. Somebody had a fire in our house, and she said, they need clothes. I said, I'll get to it. She said, no, we need it now. I emptied my closet, great big plastic, garbage bag. And we need to see that there's a moral responsibility because we've been blessed, but also extended family in the church, and we take care of one another, our elderly. You know, all my parents are gone, my wife's too, but you have that responsibility. They took care of you.
Right, right. You know, Rich, you knew a guy that was like that. His name was Jake McNeese, wasn't he, about taking care of the widows. I remember you telling me stories about Jake, doing so many things for widows in his church.
Yes, he took that part of the scripture seriously. And the big thing was taking them to get their prescriptions, driving them around, picking up food, doing their shopping for them. And I covered that in the book, The Filthy 13. But Martha, his wife, told me, said something you didn't write about that he's really good at, but he didn't brag about, was foot massages. He would always give all these old ladies foot massages. They always loved him. But I mean, he turned that new leaf and turned his life to God and became a lay preacher. But he took that scripture seriously. But I think what we're addressing, where Karl Marx, you say, got it wrong, and where the progressives are heading is, we can't rely on the benevolence of, businessmen, because they're inherently greedy. The system is greedy, and so we have to force them to pay their share of taxes. And so, well, tax them, so the government will be the beneficiary, not the beneficiary, but the charity will really come from the government, not individuals.
I've been told that in the last, from a person who raises money, that companies are on their own accord, because I went to look into a drug program in Italy with a doctor and this administrator. And this person's a fundraiser, and said that at least in the last 10, it's probably maybe 12 now, that companies have really taken a moral responsibility, put back into their communities, and they are stepping up. You know, when you force people to do something, it's not out of your heart. And, you know, we're going to tax you. You're the bad people because you have so much. I don't think you put people on a guilt trip. I think generosity has to come out of a heart of gratefulness. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't take care of our responsibility and not pay any taxes, especially the more wealthy. But the corporate world, I've been told, is really stepping up to contribute to a lot of these programs, and they can be depended upon.
I've heard that too. But I think where we're going with this is that if we're leaving charity to the those with means, then there's going to be some people left out. And that, I guess, from the progressive movement is that we want to cover everybody. And the problem is that the, charity tends to be associated with Christian or godly values. And so now what we have is they're giving to those things they value and not to other programs that the progressives would value. Does that make sense?
we eliminate poverty. Jesus said, poor you'll always have with you. Remember when Judas got upset about the spikenard being poured out on him? And you can always do for them. And I think that to think the government is going to be competent in making sure everybody is equal is just not realistic. And it takes responsibility and compassion out of each of our hearts, because the government will do it. So why do I have to worry about go to welfare, go to this, go to that? And look, my father got a check from being a disabled, 100% disabled veteran. That's how we lived. I'm grateful for that. One of the reasons I went back into the military, I felt like I needed to give back. Okay, so there is a social security. I mean, I have social security myself, but I think that if you give everything over to Big Brother, we fail to see, like the scripture says, don't say you're going to give the Corbin, you know, this money I can't give to my parents and help. This is for God. That's a cop-out. We have to see our responsibility to our own first. And the Bible says if we don't, we're worse than an unbeliever. We've denied the faith. And so I don't think we could just government. And unfortunately, people are going to fall through the cracks. And, you know, it's more noble to beg than to steal. You know, I see these people on TV and they're stealing and this and that. And there are other people that are begging. It takes a lot of humility. And so I think we need to be responsive to the best way. Say, well, maybe they're not sincere. That's for God to judge, not you or I. One day, a guy came up to me. Of course, I have my uniform on as a priest. And he says, you know, I need to go to a doctor. And I don't have enough money. I've had this doctor since I was a kid, this and that. And he was at a parts store. So I don't have any money. And the Lord just laid on my heart, you got a gas card. And so I went, and it was a big car, and I filled it almost $50. And I filled the car up for him. I gave him my information. He called me. He told me I went to the doctors. I made it back. Like, he, you know, and it was like sometimes we think we don't have, when the Lord wants us to use our resources to help other people. But then we have compassion. How would you feel? And he, you could tell he was a sickly man. If you had to go to the doctor, and you had this doctor since you were a kid, you had some football injuries or whatever, and you couldn't get to this doctor a couple hours away because you didn't have enough money. Who knows your back, you know, and we have to put ourselves in other people's place. And, you know, there are times that we can help, but other times you can then say, I asked him, I said, would you ever do any odd jobs? Do you cut grass? In other words, you know, it can't all be that people, are you capable? In other words, he was talking before, Rich, about, you know, disabled. Okay, are you capable? Yes, I do some odd jobs. Well, then let's help them there. Let me, you know, give you a job so that you have earned it, but then I'm also helping you because I realize that you have needs and you're just meeting your rent because he was on some SSI or something. And so I think there are creative ideas, but if we stop being compassionate, like I said, when I was in the Philippines, especially on our way to Vietnam, I really thought I was poor in the projects until I saw people living in cardboard houses.
Well, I'll cite an example or a couple of examples of the government handling charity, and that is Obama managed to get all that stimulus money to distribute it, and studies came back that very little of it got down to the people that it was intended for. Because the problem with government is overhead, and that they created so much oversight, or, you know, there were so many hands that had to go through, and each one of them took their share. And so there was very little left over. Where it comes to corporate charity, that goes straight to who they want it to go to. Okay. So I would say there's a difference there. So yes, we have problems with the government as far as trying to distribute a lot of this this money. Your thoughts?
Rich, can you talk about that wheelbarrow load of the money from Germany? You made a really good point when we were discussing this earlier.
Yeah, well, that's a product of inflation, and I think we're changing gears on that now. I'm hearing that our federal government is printing more money, right? And my question is why? Because printing money devalues that money, right? So, so when there's more money in circulation, your money is worth less, okay? So, say the dollar is only worth 80 has a purchasing power of 80 cents, all right? After World War One, if you remember, Germany had this huge debt. They owed, part of the armistice was that they had to pay France and all the other countries for the damages done by the war. And in fact, Germany recently paid off their debt to, I think, France. Well, this crippled their nation, and this debt was placed on them in order to literally cripple them. Like, you're going to be so poor, you'll never be able to build an army again. So what they did is they just printed more money to pay it off. And what I found is, inflation is good if you're a homeowner or you have huge debt, because that numerical value does not, the mortgage payments doesn't change with inflation. And what happens with inflation is, like every time that we got a pay raise in the army or the government, all the other prices went up. So your spending capital does not change, right? So you're making, I remember making twice as much at one time, when I first got hired by the federal government, and I remember where I was literally making twice as much, and I couldn't buy twice as much. And that was an example of the inflation. Now, like I said, I've said in previous shows, the only pay raises I've got that actually counted towards spending capital was when it was a promotion. All right. Now, what I found, though, was as my pay doubled, my mortgage payments have not increased. So it's like that debt has been reduced by a half. And so as I've heard that the federal government has printed anywhere from up to 40% more money to get it out in circulation. And the only reason I can see him doing that, but I'm not hearing why, but the only reason I can see him doing that is to reduce this debt. So when the moderates and the conservatives are saying, all right, so we don't have that money. They say we do. We're going to borrow this money. We have this huge debt. And so to pay everybody off, so what we'll do instead is if we print more money, the money will be worthless, but that bill is still the same. That's the same. The problem, though, is for the common citizen, everything costs more. So unless their salary is following the inflation rate, they're literally falling behind. So I do not know what's going on. I mean, I can't believe that our government leaders could be that naive and stupid about printing money. But the example, when we talked about that, is when I was in high school, I remember receiving the class on that the inflation rate, because the Germans were printing so much money, that a wheelbarrow full of Deutsche Marks to buy a loaf of bread. That's how worthless that money was. And it wasn't just Germany. It was also the Italian lire. Inflation was extremely high before World War II. That's how the fascists And the Nazis were able to gain power. They promised to fix this.
Very true. So I just want to ask this question, and I'd like to why should America, why should anyone be fixated on a capitalist society? And, you know, we don't have a lot of time, so I don't want to make it too difficult, but I do want to, you know, why would an American voter want to vote for a candidate that says, hey, I am going to fully engage the power of capitalism problems? And what should they be looking for as either signs that they're really knowing what they're talking about, or signs that it's just another politician that's trying to push crony capitalism? Father Michael, what do you think?
I think that if we're talking about throwing money at problems and we're calling that capitalism, we're wrong. And I'm talking about the politicians. If we're talking about investing in future discoveries, future inventions, things of that nature, then you're being innovative. I mean, there was a time when certain factories and things became obsolete. And so you have to be a forward thinker and start thinking about, you know, robotics or whatever else it might be. So I think when a politician just says, like I was watching, you know, well, we're going to give teachers more money. Well, you know, let's be honest. Now, it's a broad brush. Are they really, I'm not saying they don't work hard, but are they really putting out a good product? When you look at where Americans fall as far as our math proficiency or science proficiency, it's nowhere compared to some of the countries that go to school 6 days and that are serious about learning. So I think when a politician's just talking about, I'm going to give more money. No, let's put in an investment that's going to bless everyone that's involved with it, not just a few that you think are the ones that you're looking for their votes. And in this case, it's the teachers union. And, you know, I respect, my wife's been a teacher all her life. You know, I mean, I understand how hard of a job she taught. Special education, junior high school, and public school. I know how hard it is, but are we really putting out the type of students that, you know, we're being paid to produce? And I don't think just because you're poor, that means you're stupid. I don't think just because you're poor, that means you're a criminal. You know, you think of Dr. Ben Carson or somebody like that. And I know for myself, growing up very poor. You know, one of my cousins, and he's probably not listening, he's still alive, but he'd say, oh, give it to the Pacellos, they'll eat anything. You know, because we were so poor. But you don't have to stay there. And I think politicians are always trying to sell something rather, and most of them are not business people. So they're just going to give you more money and everybody's going to be happy. But are we producing engineers, you know, which we have a problem producing and there's always a shortage of. And so I'm just concerned that, yes, it's a good system if you know how to work it and you don't get caught up in it and let it take over your life. There are people that make money, they're idle. You know, John says in, I think it's 2 John, you know, be careful of idols. And sometimes we know we have these goals, but they become idols. And we serve them and they don't serve us. So I think a lot of politicians, and I know we don't have time, are deceptive when they just say we're going to give more money rather than invest it.
So obviously you summed up nearly every politician that's running on both sides of the ticket. I'm just telling you, it's because every single one of them thinks that the answer is throwing money. And I mean, the big argument for the infrastructure bill right now is the amount of money. It's not whether or not the things that you're investing in are relevant or that, you know, or something that's going to improve our lives, you know, for instance. Yeah, or make money, like, you know, and a big, for instance, is, you know, for the last, I guess, last 3 months, the cell phone service where I'm at is just horrible. It's not always been the greatest, but right now it's just the worst I've ever seen it. You know, and it's like I've called AT&T and I've called Suddenlink and in the different places, and you know, they talk about cell phone towers, you know, and you know, we need to put up more cell phone towers, you know, we gotta do this or we gotta do that. But you know, there's a lot of talk but nobody's really doing anything. So ultimately, if you had better service, you would sell more service. You know what I mean?
That's right.
And it's the same thing with you know, obviously we all need good roads and bridges and the infrastructure piece and the communications piece. That's very important. But there's so much of an argument wrapped around money, and it's because I kind of figured this out, you know, in the position that I am with the Purple Heart, you know, that all of these problems have always been around, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they're never, ever taken care of because most of the leaders, you know what I mean, and I'm very cautious with my wording, but most of the leaders, not all of the leaders, most of the leaders, see waiting to fix a problem as more beneficial and advantageous towards their career. And the same thing with politicians. They may not handle something this year, you know, because they need to wait to handle it next year when it's their time to be reelected. So I think if we had a real case of true capitalism and morals, you know,
I'll give you a good example. Were Christian schools or private schools, charter schools, rather than you being forced to pay into something, you're looking at a better product. Look, I love and respect teachers. Some of them, you know, have to deal with some difficult children because their parents haven't raised them right or they have problems. Mm-hmm. But I think when you look at the free market, my wife's school, they've had people knocking the doors down because they've been teaching and they're putting out a good product.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for everybody. They offer scholarships. But I think that the free market, there are things that be done. But we want the government to function in an area where they're not competent. And hasn't – even when we had something like Katrina, I said, well, we need to get a good business person that has had to deal with these problems and let them deal with it. You know, we need the private sector and the public sector. They need to work together and the church. But
Casey,
I think that
– go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. That's what I'm just saying. Go ahead, sir.
A good case is during the COVID – you know, when it first kicked off, when they were doing the tests, you know, it was a pig's ear when the government was running it. So they went to Chick-fil-A and they said, Chick-fil-A, show us how to get people in and out, tested and done. And the guys that set up that marvelous thing, I mean, if you ever go to Chick-fil-A, and I'm not advertising for Chick-fil-A, but I will just say that, you know, we go there a lot. And when you get in line, you think, oh, my goodness. I mean, the traffic, it goes around. Yeah. But they have mastered the ability to be able to get you in, get your money, get your food, and get you down the road. And it worked for the COVID testing, and it bled over into the COVID vaccines, you know, because they were doing it all from the car. And it was because somebody was smart enough to go and say, we can't do it. Let's go see how are you guys doing it. So I get what you're saying about that. And we need to do more of that. And you're right. Not all people that are wealthy. Well, I can tell you, I run a museum And I've had some of the most wealthiest people I've ever met in my life who have come to visit the museum and wrote some massive $250,000, $500,000 checks.
Wow.
I mean, just to keep things going and not want you to blow a bugle about it. Imagine
mm-hmm.
that. So,
you know, you get some
those
of these movie stars,
people.
They give a $50,000 check when they make $50 million. That's like you and I, you know, give them $500 and you blow
mm-hmm.
a trumpet. If you really care, you don't have to have the big check with the picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
that's
I think
right.
there are a lot of philanthropists that really do wonderful things, and they'll give an account to God for what he gave
mm-hmm.
them and how they used it. That's stewardship.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're down to about 3 minutes and 40 seconds. I've enjoyed the show. I've learned a lot, to be honest with you. I feel blessed and, you know, that I got to sit here and to get a, you know, and I would consider this a master's level conversation, maybe even a doctoral level conversation. Some of the things that you're talking about, most Americans do not talk about, and they're taught that capitalism is a dirty word, and it's, you know, crony capitalism is a dirty word. You know, socialism maxed as progressiveness is a dirty word. You know, it really is, or even worse, communism. You know, you see this.
Mm-hmm.
Communism is not progress. You know, being progressive, you're not progressing. You're not moving forward with
that's
that.
Right.
You know, I mean, the whole Eastern European bloc country model clearly shows you that communism and socialism is a failed and flawed system that will fail and flaw time and time and time again.
And that's why Poland is probably the most prosperous in Eastern Europe today, because
mm-hmm.
they got rid of the system.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you remember that, I'm trying to think, I wish I could remember that, the movement in Poland, but I remember watching it when it first took off. What was that guy's
name? The Solidarity Movement.
Yeah.
Solidarity.
Mm-hmm. They pushed forward a movement. But anyways, it eventually just, it helped to bring down the Berlin Wall and everything else, you know what I mean? It was...
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
It's ironic because weren't they the first ones that were dominated by Austria and Poland by the Nazis?
They
and
were.
It's interesting
they
how
were.
They got freed from that, and they wanted God. Pope John Paul II had a great deal to do with it, and some of the worker class, and they wanted more. And I think when we talk about capitalism, people want more. I taught a course on leadership, ethical leadership today, and I just want to thank Rich on the air for coming and showing up there while I had the class today, because it meant a lot to me that he was there.
Yeah. Well, folks, we got
so
a minute
get
left.
A chance to give the parting wisdom is I'd like to go back to the parable of the fish, but the Oklahoma version of that story. So if you teach a man, if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. But if you teach him to fish, all he's going to do from here on out is drink beer and fish all day.
Wow. All right. Well, on that note, folks, with the last 20 seconds of the show, I want to say to everybody, thank you for joining us tonight on Continue Mission. Join us every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and join the conversation. Call in, ask questions. We love to hear your questions. God bless each and every one of you, and have a great and wonderful weekend. Good night, everybody.